Rancher John Hughes was inducted as the 16th member of the Oklahoma Ag Hall of Fame on Thursday afternoon at the Oklahoma State Capitol, a part of the Ag Day activities for 2013. After the presentation, several broadcasters got together and talked with John Hughes about his selection to be a member of the Oklahoma Ag Hall of Fame. He said, without a doubt, he was overwhelmed.
I truly am. I was really taken back by the number of people that came, some of them for quite a ways. And, you know, I didn't even know that I'd won this till just a few days ago. And I just can't imagine how this came about like it did. But anyway, I'm very proud and very humble. And really, I would like to accept the award on behalf of everybody, particularly in animal agriculture. You know, today, an awful lot of the news when it concerns our industry is not good. It's a meat recall or something, a disease outbreak or something very negative. And so it's wonderful to have some good things happening, and they do happen every day. And Oklahoma agriculture has come so far and done such a great job. And our state board of agriculture, our state department of agriculture, they test our scales. They help us in so many ways, marketing wise, every way you can. And you know, you really can't say that, I think, in a lot of states. And Oklahoma has an excellent agricultural department. And then, of course, our land-grant university, Oklahoma State, they've been extremely helpful for me and my career. I've tried to look and learn and things like Rue Minson and that came on the market almost 30 years ago. We used it up front because we believed in the research that they'd done at Oklahoma State, and it proved to be true. And the GOLD program that Keith Lesby and Don Gill came up with, I just can't tell you how much money that's put in our pocket over the years, because it really does work. It's a great program.
I know that you talked about some of your conservation efforts. You had it in your film there, your video. Why were you so interested in doing the conservation things that you did on your ranch?
Well, in all honesty, I had to make a decision. My father was fortunate enough to have a job in town, a good job, and I didn't. And I was at the crossroads. I didn't have enough carrying capacity on the original ranch that I came back home to, in order to run enough cattle to make a living. So I was either going to have to improve the carrying capacity of the ranch, or I was going to have to be a part-time rancher like my father had been. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to devote my life to ranching. And that's what I wanted. That's how I wanted to make my living. And so that's really when I found that and the first big influence toward using herbicide was the fellow that ran the USDA experiment station out at Woodward, that spoke at the first clinic that I went back to OSU for after I graduated, Pat McElvain. Pat died a few years ago, and thank goodness I had the opportunity several times over the years to tell him what an influence he had on me. But he was the last speaker on the program that day, and all the others had talked about improving genetics and so forth, and how much progress you could make in so many years with your improving your herd and so forth. And he got up there and he looked right at me, and I'd never met him, but he really did. He looked right at me, and he said, "You know, I can tell you how to double your production. Not overnight, but in a very short time." And he said, "Herbicide." And 2,4-D was lightly used. We're talking about 1960. And 2,4-5-T, of course, was the brush killer then. and it was lightly used. And that really got my attention. And I had sprayed some, but it was the question of getting the cart before the horse. I didn't have the cash flow to be able to afford to spray enough of my own country because I didn't have the income. So that's when I was really forced into the aerial spraying business. And I only stayed in long enough to get my own country cleaned up. But we still have a rigorous herbicide program in conjunction with prescribed burning. And we're able to keep that that cross timbers that wants to come back abated. And it's really meant a huge difference. Then I was also fortunate enough that it kind of gave some local landowners a look at what could be done. And I was able to lease some other properties because they knew that I knew how to take care of them. And so over the years, I've been fortunate enough to lease a number of ranches and increase the size of our carrying capacity that way without having to buy additional land. So it's been a great career, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. But this honor today is really the icing on the cake. I'm just, I'm overwhelmed.
What's the biggest change you've seen?
There have been a number of changes, but sometimes you overlook some that really change agriculture in general, but particularly the livestock industry. For instance, a lot of times you don't think about anymore the eradication of the screwworm as being a big, big thing, but it was, and it continues to be a huge thing. There's not many people that remember what a scourge screwworms were and the labor intensity that it put on the market. Another one that people don't recognize is really changing our industry dramatically is the interstate highway system that went in. It used to be that if we needed stocker cattle, Fort Smith, Arkansas was about as far as we went, and the road was so crooked getting there that the cattle didn't feel very good. And of course the trucks were small too, so it was slow process. But I guess the technological changes via things like ionophores and implants and that sort of thing are the thing that has kept us right at the production every year, more production. You know, I know they've done it in crops, and now with gene marking and so forth, we're beginning to catch up in animal agriculture to some of the things they've been doing in plant agriculture for a good many years.
Why did you give back as far as service to USMEF, Beef Council, NCBA, OCA?
You know, I found out what really tipped me off before I went in the years before I went in the brush spraying business, the aerial spraying business. I was busy every day at home, and I didn't get out and see what was happening, even on places in my own area. And that kind of broadened my horizon a little, and then I got interested in going to OCA meetings and would go to the convention and broadened it a little more, and met people like John Dunn from Woodward that gave me so many good ideas over the years, even though he ranched in a completely different country. And he also had a ranch in South Dakota, and we ran some cattle up there and got interested in the feed yard business and went together with some of my college buddies and built a feed yard at Liberal, Kansas. And one thing just kind of led to another, but through my participation with those like USMEF, it was wonderful for me. I hope that I gave back as much as I got, because I learned so much about the big picture. And now it's so much easier to know immediately when we're trending one way or another, you know, what this might lead to. Sometimes you know, unintended consequences come with trade agreements and so forth, and history has certainly proved that. And one of the big questions as far as future for Oklahoma agriculture, U.S. agriculture, is free trade. You know, we need to always keep an eye on that and make sure that we're not doing something that's going to impede free trade, because we know what we can produce. We have the combination of the know-how, the land resources, and the infrastructure to deliver. And not very many places in the world have that combination and a stable government.
Northeast Oklahoma rancher John Hughes, the newest member of the Oklahoma Ag Hall of Fame. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.